Good afternoon. I'm Kate Manahan. Thank you for joining me for the 10th edition of New Mainers Speak. This is a weekly half-hour program where you can hear firsthand about the lives of some of Maine's immigrants. Together, we will visit with individuals regarding their life stories and enduring hopes as new Mainers. Today's guest is Anella Linton. Anella came to the United States on a work visa a year and a half ago. She's originally from Portrush, Northern Ireland, and lived in Belfast and London before making her way across the pond. You may recognize her voice as she has trained here as a DJ and covers shows as a substitute at WMPG from now and then. So thank you for being my guest today on New Mainers Speak, Anella.
You're welcome, Kit. It's nice to be here again.
Told you you'd recognize her voice.
I'm on the other mic. I'm on B mic today.
So great. So this song that we played right up was called Suspect Device by Stiff Little Fingers. And Nella picked it out herself because she said it reminded her of her childhood. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, I mean, it's a band called Stiff Little Fingers. They formed around 1977, around the height of the Troubles in Belfast. And it was a band that drew lots of people from different communities together, and they were just a great distraction from what was going on.
Yeah, and we've talked a little bit about it, but can you share a little bit about what was going on when you were a kid growing up?
Well, a bit of background is Northern Ireland is made up of two communities, the Protestants and the Catholics. There's not much other diversity there, and there's been troubles for centuries in Northern Ireland, and in the 70s it really kicked off again when the IRA reinstigated their campaign on the mainland as well as Northern Ireland.
And do you find when you're here and you tell people you're from Northern Ireland that people know what you're talking about?
Not really. I think most people think I'm Irish, which is a misconception. I'm Northern Irish, part of the British part of Ireland. Most people think I know people from Cork.
they a different island.
Yeah, well, it's a different country. It's down in the southern part of Ireland, and there's definitely lots of people with Cork ancestries here. So I don't know what was going on in Cork with, maybe they were testing out Viagra way back in the early 1900s, but there's definitely lots of people throughout the world from Cork.
Yes, that's funny. So is there something you wish all Americans knew and understood about Northern Ireland?
I think the main thing is it's a British country. It's the majority of people in Northern Ireland that want it to remain British. Also, I think one of the things is there was a lot of support for terrorism from America back in the 70s and 80s and 90s with the, you know, St. Patrick's Day parades all through America. There was a bucket going around and all that money went to, well, most of the money that was collected for Ireland was going to buy guns and bombs, and I think a lot of American people who donated didn't realise they were supporting terrorism, and which caused a lot of death and destruction in my country then.
So it went to support the IRA?
Yeah.
Is that what you're saying?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I bet you $1 million most people didn't know what they were putting coins in that bucket for.
Yeah, and it's quite sad, really. And, it makes me never want to go to St. Patrick's Day parade here.
Yeah. Do you still drink green beer?
I had never seen green beer at all in my life until we came here.
But there's a little bit of news here about beer in America.
Yeah.
Do you want to spring it on them?
I know. It was just one of the things that when I was researching where I wanted to live and I was looking up, one of the criteria was it had to be on the East Coast and it wasn't a big city. So New York and Boston were out, and Portland kind of came up on the list. And I researched the what was going on in Portland, and there seemed to be a lot of craft breweries and microbreweries here. So that was a big tick for me. So beer here is definitely much better than beer at home.
Now, did I just hear you say beer here is better than beer in Northern Ireland?
Shh. Okay. I hope none of my friends at home are listening. whiskey is better at home.
Okay.
We have one of the oldest distilleries in the world near us called Bushmills Distillery. That's right, 6 miles from my hometown. So we do whiskey better, but beer, you guys get it.
All right. Well, that's good to know. I wouldn't have guessed.
Yeah, I've tried a few.
So tell us a little bit about your family composition. Five kids?
I have two brothers, two sisters, my mom and dad. Yeah, we all grew up in Portrush, and three of us headed to Belfast when we were 17, 18. But yeah, two brothers, two sisters, nice, really close family. And we grew up in a small town called Portrush, which is on the, it's a peninsula, like Portland is a peninsula, and like Portland, it's a port. So it was a really nice place to grow up, very beautiful, very scenic, a couple of beautiful beaches, cold weather, rain. Yeah, so it was a special place to grow up, but the troubles kind of did have an impact on my life there.
Travellers might recognise Portrush by the name of Giant's Causeway as well, right?
Yeah, my mum was born at the Giant's Causeway, not right on the rocks there, but her family were from the Giant's Causeway. It was known as the Erd, but her family ran the Giant's Causeway and ran the little shop. So if anybody has been to the Giant's Causeway, those old photographs are my relatives.
Oh, that's beautiful. It is one of the more beautiful rock formations I've ever seen. Mm-hmm. And it's said to connect Scotland to Northern Ireland, right?
Yeah, there's an old tale with the giants, where the giant lifted a big pile of rocks and threw it over to the Scottish giant. And that created Loch Ness, which is in Northern Ireland, and made the Isle of Man because he didn't quite get to Scotland. But it's a fantastic story.
A bridge that might almost...
Yeah, it goes right out. It's a causeway that goes right out into the ocean. Very, very rough and very, very scenic, very beautiful.
Very natural.
Yeah, and millions of years old.
Yeah. So, interestingly, Anila's mother is a Protestant, but her father was a Quaker. I love this part. Just to mess with everybody's reality. You know, we thought Quakers were in Pennsylvania, but...
Yeah, there's a community there. And there's for a country having two religions, Protestant and Catholic, a Quaker was definitely... there's a joke going that went around, you know, is that a Catholic Quaker or a Protestant Quaker?
You have to pick either way.
Yeah. So they couldn't quite understand that there are other religions out there.
I love it. So the Quakers went to build a utopian community, right?
There's one family called the Richardsons that wanted this model village, and they built this model village, I think, based on the three principles of Quaker, you know, three P's, no pub, no pawn brokers, and equals to no police. So and they did that. There was no pub. I think they've recently got a pub there now, but for years and years there was no pub or no gambling or no bad way of life there. So it's a really lovely place called Bessbrook.
Bessbrook.
Yeah. It's got a lovely little Quaker village there and a little Quaker house. Nice spot.
And that's where your grandmother lived?
Yeah. She lived there. It became a military base, and then when the troubles kicked off in the 70s, so it had a large military base. They basically turned in the old linen mill, which was world famous, and the military moved in there. And
it's ironic, isn't it? To take the Quaker institution and go military with it.
Yeah. It had its fair share of problems as well, that whole area, then after that. Actually, we used to visit my grandmother in Bessbrook, and because it was a military base, they would train the soldiers around the square. So we would be 8, 9, 10 years old, and the soldiers would be pointing their guns at us as we played. I mean, we thought it was fun. We weren't scared. We thought it was.
Were they playing with you?
No, they were practicing. They were very serious. You know, you couldn't have a joke with them or anything. They were very serious. But having the gun pointed at you as you played in the park was.
That's unnerving. I can't believe you thought that was fun.
Well, we got excited when we were going on holidays to see my granny, and we'll get to see the soldiers, because we didn't see them in Portrush. Portrush was a very neutral town. It didn't have a lot of problems. Most Catholics and Protestants got on very well together. In fact, a lot of my friends were Catholics, and it didn't really bother me at all.
When did you start noticing the difficulties in your own life?
When I was it was always there as an undercurrent. There was a couple of bombs in our hometown that ruined, you know, a lot of the local businesses, and there's two policemen that were shot dead in our town. But I didn't really have a huge impact until I moved to Belfast when I was 17. And of course we moved to the most Protestant area of Belfast, not knowing. And most of our friends are Catholics, so they would come and visit us at the weekends. The local hoods, local thugs would follow them home. And one time one of my friends got followed home, and they searched him, which was a common practice then. and they found this little card in his pocket, and it said, "I am a Catholic. In case of an emergency, contact a priest," which is what I think a lot of Catholics carry around. And they beat him up there and then they followed him up to our house, and they broke into our house about half an hour later with balaclavas on their heads and big sticks, and smashed our front door in and just beat everybody up that they could there where, as they came in. It was quite scary. And this was after a while that we were living there. We moved out the next day. And apparently that was a wise move on our part, because we were going to be burnt out of our house, we were told.
That's really intense for a 17-year-old.
Yeah. And another time, one of my friends from Armagh, he was a Catholic as well, and they found out he was a Catholic because of his name, because they ask your name, and he got a gun put to his head and told him to leave. So it was scary. And any time we were walking home, it was always, we tried to get a taxi all the time, you know, from the town home, but it was difficult walking through certain parts of Belfast. And as you were going into the town, you were searched by the soldiers, and you always had to go through checkpoints to get into town. There's only a couple of bars that you could go to, so that was another one of the reasons I wanted to leave so soon, because it was a couple of bars you could go to that were safe.
How soon did you know you'd like to leave Northern Ireland?
I think I was about 14 or so, and I think I'd realised I was gay at that age, and there was no role models at all in my hometown or that I knew of, so I kind of felt very isolated and knew that I wanted to move to a bigger city. And I always had this fascination with America, and when I was 20 I came here to work with Camp America. I'm not sure whether you're familiar with Camp America. So it gives people from the UK an opportunity to come and work in a summer camp here, and I ended up in Camp Algonquin in near Chicago, which was really good fun. So I spent a summer here and fell in love with the States.
And you were okay with the fact that we didn't all wear black shoes?
No, I got used to the white shoes and the slacks here. Or as you guys call them, the pants. We call our underwear pants, which is funny.
So we're all walking around in our underwear?
Yeah, so like, people talk about ironing their pants, and it makes me laugh.
Well, similarly, it might make us laugh when you're always heading to the toilet. Right, we head to the bathroom.
Yeah, that's one of the cruder things that I say. I'm learning to not say. I started actually thinking now in my head, I've got to go to the bathroom, which is weird for me.
Oh, it's like dreaming in a different language.
Yeah, we say we go to the loo, go to the toilet. We're very graphic about it.
So you knew for a long time you wanted to leave Northern Ireland.
Yeah.
You left first to go to London?
Yeah, I left in age 24. And don't get me wrong, I had a great time in Belfast. I had great friends and real mixed friends. And I was into scooters as well. So we would go to scooter rallies in Northern Ireland and Ireland. And it would be very mixed there. And that was a great thing that brought everybody together. But I went to London at 24 and stayed there for about 17, 18 years. And then came here. Yep.
You are listening to WMPG, Southern Maine Community Radio, broadcasting from USM. I'm Kate Manahan, and this is New Mainers Speak. And if you're just joining us, welcome. Today I'm having a conversation with Anella Linton, originally from Northern Ireland. She works here in Portland, covering the American sales region for a company she's worked for about 10 years. And can you tell us a little bit about how your work brought you to the United States and what that involves kind of legally as far as immigration?
Yeah, a lot of our business, I work for a company called Primal Pictures, and a lot of our business is in the medical universities here. And we never really had anybody here that was the sort of center point of the business. We did everything from London. We had a couple of sales reps out here in the States, and they were looking to send somebody to the States to set up a little mini office. And of course it was perfect for me, so because I have an American partner, so it was a real perfect for me. So I got the process going, and in between that time the company was taken over by another company, so the process took a little longer than I had imagined, and I ended up getting a visa and arrived here last January. So I'm a New Mainer.
You're a New Mainer. We're so glad to have you. I think for our listeners, I would like to help organize what it means to be an immigrant in America and all the little facets of that. First of all, as an immigrant, you can be called a lawful permanent resident. You could also be called a green card holder, an alien, immigrants admitted, and admissions. You can just be called admitted. But there are four groups of people who become immigrants. People who reunify with their family, that's 66% of the people coming, at least in 2010 it was. You can come for humanitarian purposes as a refugee or an asylum seeker. That's 13% of the people who come. You can come as an employee-sponsored individual, and that's Anella's situation, which is true of about 14% of the people who come to the United States. And the final group is other. Those are people who are usually green card lottery winners. And that's kind of the quick ticket, the way to diversify our immigrants, not just from areas of huge need, but also from the whole globe. Mm-hmm. And so I understand that you have a little experience with applying for the lottery.
Yeah, I apply for the lottery every year. Well, I have done for this past 5 years, but when I was 18, I actually won the lottery. Myself and my sister, we won the lottery, and we were living in Belfast at the time. And because flights then, there was no cheap airlines, so a flight to London was quite expensive, and we had to go to London to get the medical, and it was just too much money for us to go fly there and fly back with, you know, maybe we might not have got it or whatever, there might have been some other reason, but we didn't come here. we lost out, we missed out on an opportunity, and we ended up, both of us ended up going to London. But since then, I do apply for the lottery. I've applied for it this past 5 years, and May the 1st is the date that you go to check your ticket. And I checked my ticket with enthusiasm the other day, and I wasn't selected.
You were not the one. Though I understand you are more likely to win the green card lottery than you are a pick three. your chances are better. But I don't know about winning it twice.
Okay, I'll keep trying. Maybe they've disqualified me because I didn't take it up that last time. But it's only certain countries that get it. I'm quite lucky being from Northern Ireland. I hold a British passport, and they include Northern Ireland with the Irish people. So it's Northern Ireland, and people from Ireland get it, but people from England can't apply, which is good.
And that's because they're one of our top immigrant groups anyway. And so this is for the lesser immigrant groups. And right. That's why Northern Ireland's in the mix. And 37 people got it this year.
Oh.
From Northern Ireland.
Damn, who are they?
No. You're going to have to investigate.
I want their
that.
Names.
So you arranged with your employer to come to the United States. You have a work visa. And when you arrive in the United States, you go through the line after your long flight. And the signs everywhere say, "Welcome to the United States of America." And I'm kind of wondering what that feels like to stand there in line and to go through that checkpoint.
Well, as you arrive, there is all these signs, "Welcome to America," with the smiley faces everywhere. And then you face this line of hundreds of people waiting to go through the immigration queues, or lines, as you call them. And sometimes you're waiting there for over an hour in those lines, and you're exhausted after a long flight. And then you're greeted with these very serious immigration officers who don't like to joke, and there's no "Welcome to America" from them at all. It's a very it's very scary, actually. You feel nervous going through, because they can make a decision to send you back home if they don't agree with what you're saying.
And then you've had so much experience at checkpoints throughout your life. I'm sure it comes with some baggage.
Yeah, that's true. That's maybe another reason, is this nervousness and the authority there. Yeah, maybe.
I think that sounds a little scary. So
yeah.
I'm glad you made it through the checkpoint.
Yeah, it's every time I go home and come back, it's very nerve-wracking for some reason. Yeah,
I would imagine so. So my understanding is that people from Northern Ireland, when they're getting a passport, get to pick which country they're going to have their passport issued through. This is so curious to me that you could pick.
An advantage of being from Northern Ireland and living through the Troubles is we get to pick for Irish or British.
Okay, yeah. So you can get an Irish passport or one from Great Britain.
Yeah.
And which do you have?
I have a British passport. I'm not sure whether that's... Well, it's because I identify as Northern Irish and as British. a lot of my Catholic friends identify as Irish, so they would have an Irish passport.
Is that kind of true across the board?
I would say so. I'm not sure. I know that a lot of my Catholic friends have Irish passports, and it's probably maybe safer to travel on if you're traveling to some of these sort of war-torn areas.
So when I was doing research about immigration, I found it incredibly complicated. There's so many different names for the titles of immigrants. There are different forms. There are different exemptions. Mm. There are different fees. And how do you sort it all out? Did you go to a lawyer? How did you know even to apply for the lottery?
Well, when I was applying through work, we were a very small company. Now we're a much bigger company. We're part of a bigger organization. But I did a lot of the groundwork for my initial visa, and it was pages and pages of work. You had to provide all sorts of evidence, and it took definitely a couple of months. And then when we became part of this bigger organization, a lawyer handled it. and I got it, you know, very quickly once the bigger organization sorted it out, and they had a lawyer involved. So they just dealt with all the paperwork and all the legal stuff.
I'm sure that was hugely helpful.
Oh my God, it was so stressful dealing with it myself and not having much help with... I was working with this other company who weren't much good, so I would go with if you're planning on doing it, I would try and go with a specialist that knows what they're talking about and has good experience, because I worked with a company that were awful.
Yeah. Good advice. It's like another language.
Yeah. I like the term illegal alien. That's
Do you like to be an alien?
I call myself a legal alien.
A legal alien.
Illegal. No, not an illegal one, sorry. Illegal alien.
Illegal. Yeah. Yeah, how do you feel about being an alien?
Yeah, I like it. I like it when people ask it, so I refer myself as a legal alien here.
That way people, you know, you wear your cap so that people can't see all the extra eyeballs on the top of your head.
I've come from a dark place.
So you are a British citizen and working in America. What do you do about health insurance?
Oh my God, that's a whole... Oh, that blows my mind, that whole health insurance. But I pay into a health insurance plan through my work, and they pay most of it, I think.
That covers you here.
Yeah, because I'm used to, you know, being part of the NHS where we don't have to think about it. It's just all free, free in inverted commas, because we pay, obviously, taxes and insurance there, national insurance, but we don't see it as health insurance, really.
So your company basically has to buy you American health insurance.
Yeah. Which I've taken advantage of here. I've used it. But it's even going for a doctor's appointment and having to pay something for it is strange to me.
How long has the National Health Service been going in England?
I think sort of the 50s, 60s maybe. Is it?
Wow.
A long time, yes.
Established.
It's well established. Yeah, and it's a great thing, which seems to be going the opposite way, and it seems to be disintegrating a little bit. So I hope they can keep that, because it's, you know, people that don't have much money, the idea of paying for health and paying for doctors' bills it's awful to think about.
So in Great Britain, it's experiencing difficulties too.
Yeah,
with the rising costs.
Yeah, mm-hmm. yeah. People do have health insurance there as well, if they can fast track, because sometimes there's a delay with the National Health Service. You're on a waiting list.
And so, how do you fast track?
You get private health insurance.
Oh, additional.
Yeah, you pay for it, like here. Oh. So you'd pay for it. It's not as expensive as here, though. I couldn't believe the price of health insurance here, what people pay. Unbelievable.
It is. It's difficult to...
Yeah, coming from somewhere where you get it free is, you know, and seeing what people have to pay here is...
Yeah. In the week, this past week, there was an article, and it showed what we pay for our MRI, and what people in England pay for it, and what people in other countries pay for it, and we'll pay something like $1,300. They'll pay something like $350. Mm-hmm. Same with prescriptions. They listed out how much they cost in different places. We'll pay $250. They'll pay $30.
Yeah.
So there are a lot of discrepancies.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah. But lots of advantages of having private health insurance, and lots of advantages of having health or having NHS.
You get a little try at both.
I mean, I think I prefer the NHS. I don't like paying for health insurance since I'm not used to it.
Anela, what are your hopes and dreams for your life here in America? If everything goes perfectly as you had hoped for, what would it look like?
Well, I mean, living in London, you never seem to have time to do anything in living in a city. So I joked with my friends I was coming here to retire. I'm only 44, by the way, only. And I think living here, my hopes and dreams are just to use that time that I have, that extra time that I have, to do new things and maybe to try and get more educated, develop myself, try learn to draw. You know, I have a little scooter here, so get out in my scooter more in the sun when it's sun shines. Yeah.
Yeah, you have a plan to buy a surfboard too.
Oh, yeah. I'm doing more surfing. That's definitely, that's one of the reasons I chose Portland as well. I checked before I moved here that it had beaches, that had waves. Yeah, so I do a bit more surfing as well. Time to do the things that I love, which I couldn't do in London.
Yeah, the city can take a lot of time just for transportation.
Yeah, and energy. Mm-hmm. Just living in a city, your energy's gone by the weekend. You just want to sleep.
I'm so glad you're here. You bring such excellent energy to the room and to the community. We're delighted to have you here.
Thank you.
You have been listening to New Mainers Speak, and I'm Kate Manahan. And I want to give special thanks to my guest, Anella Linton, for joining me here today. And thank you for listening. Please join us each Sunday from noon to 12:30 for similar interviews with diverse members of our community. If you would like to hear this complete interview or interviews from previous weeks, visit newmainersspeak.com. And before we close today, I have an invitation to pass along to listeners from April 20th's guest, Reza Jalali. USM, Office of Multicultural Student Affairs, invites you to attend the 2014 International and Multicultural Graduation Celebration on May 6th, 2014. Please join us as we gather to celebrate the academic achievements of USM's multicultural and international students. Tuesday, May 6th, 5 p.m., will be the reception at Hannaford Hall, the Abramson Center on USM's Portland campus. Refreshments will be served. Faculty, staff, students, and family members are all welcome to attend. And for more information, you can contact Reza Jalali or Susan Hamilton at reza@usm.maine.edu or 780-5798. Next week, my guest will be John Abore. John is originally from what is now the Republic of South Sudan. He also lived in Uganda and came to the United States in 2004. John's a translator and cultural broker for the Portland Public Schools and the Acholi community. He's managed to juggle his work while raising a young family and completing a master's degree in public health. Please join me next week to hear what he has to share about being a New Mainer.